of the Sorry to Interrupt podcast. It's part one of two, a playoff edition. We're going to start off by talking some NHL hockey. It's me, it's Will Smith to lead off the pod. Me and Tom will talk some NBA later on. But Will, first and foremost, buddy, you're hitting leadoff tonight. How we doing?
I'm good, man. Happy to talk hockey again. I guess our first hockey pod was a hit, so I'm happy to hear that. And the games are just getting better and better, and we're getting closer and closer to the Stanley Cup final.
And the CEO liked what he heard and gave us the green light to keep doing this. And I just say, let's make some more magic tonight, talking about some round two action and recapping a couple game sevens from round one that we need to get into. But why don't we lead off with the Rangers, who last night won a thrilling double overtime game. They go 2-0 in the series. They've won all six of their playoff games so far this season, taking down the Hurricanes. And Will, to me, this game had everything. It had Igor standing on his head. It had the Rangers letting up some terrible goals late in the periods. And it also had Trocheck scoring again. He seemed to have a flair for the dramatic. But you're the hockey expert, not me. What were your biggest takeaways from not only game two, but also the first two games of this series as a whole?
Well, I'll start with game one. And we talked on the last hockey pod. It's like Carolina didn't listen to me after I told about the Capitals about taking dumb penalties. The Rangers scored two power play goals in 29 seconds on attack on a power play. And it was quickly 2-0. Mika Zibanejad twice, finally showing up after a rough start, rough end of the season for the Rangers, not scoring any goals, not getting any points. But in the first game, they're taking bad penalties. And you look at towards the end of the game, where it was a 4-3 game, Trouba takes a bad penalty. And now you have 6-on-4 because Carolina has the goalie pulled. And right off the faceoff, Svechnikov trips somebody and goes straight to the box. That's basically ball game. That's what it was in game one. There was chances there. And to be honest with you, minus the power play, the Rangers got outplayed. They had less time attack in the offensive zone. They spent less time in the neutral zone as well. Carolina controlled the puck possession the whole game. They had more shots on net. But that continues to be the story of the Rangers playoffs. It's just Igor. Just four letters is Igor. He's been unbelievable. And we'll talk about it more. We'll get into game two. Back and forth all game. It was a great game to watch. I stayed up all night watching it. But Igor, 54 saves. It's just unbelievable. That's an unheard of number, especially in the playoffs. It was one of those games that, if the Rangers lost that game, that gives Carolina so much momentum because they're one of the toughest home teams in the NHL to play in Raleigh. So obviously game three is a must win, and game four might be a must win how the Rangers play at home.
Well, you know, the biggest takeaways for me are obviously the Rangers' success on the power play, but also their ability to kill the power play. That was a success that they had all year, and it's really benefited them here in the first two games of this series. Igor is amazing. I mean, he's looking back like he did 2 years ago when they made that run to the Eastern Conference final. And it's amazing because early in the year, there was Rangers fans chattering saying, hey, can we get Quick to play in the playoffs? Is he going to be better? What's happened with Igor? I don't think anybody's asking that question now.
Yeah, absolutely. There was that 2 to 3 week span where Igor was giving up 4 to 5 goals a game. And it was just a mental thing. Not that he doesn't have the skills. We see his skills on display every night now. And Quick played well in those games, and he's obviously probably the best backup in the NHL right now. But, I mean, you can't go away with this guy. I was listening to New York radio today, and they were talking about giving Igor a rest, being up 2-0. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, why would you rest the hottest goalie in the playoffs right now? Maybe minus Jeremy Swayman of the Bruins, who's been playing almost at the level as Igor. But just keep rolling with the hot hand. What happens if you lose 6-0? Game three to the Hurricanes, and you start Quick, who has a bad game, lets in a couple bad goals, and now you're only up 2-1. Now Igor could be cold coming off of that, so I would just stick with a hot hand, and that's what the Bruins did, and we'll talk about that later. But that's the whole thing. It's just stick with a hot hand and goal, and your offense comes to play. Rangers have one of the best ones in hockey, probably the best power play right now in hockey. So it's a must win for Carolina. They got to find a way to do it. Obviously, there's all the shots on goal. As I talked about last time, what Carolina does is just chuck pucks on net. It didn't work because Igor saved all of them, basically. So they got to find a way to get a man open get some tip passes to the net, because that was the only way they scored, was on a tip with the guys in front on Igor. Shot straight on, even through traffic, they weren't getting through against it.
Yeah, no, and, you know, obviously to me is I'm looking at Igor as he's not just a hot goalie. He's one of the best goaltenders in the NHL, right?
100%, like, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't understand why you're having that conversation. If it was a journeyman who's hot, sure, maybe you can have that conversation. And 2 years ago in game four of the Pittsburgh series, he was terrible, and they benched him, and he came back, and he was great the rest of that postseason. So I think that's really ridiculous. What are the biggest keys to you for Carolina to get back into the series? Do they have to win both games in Raleigh?
I think they have to win both. Going back to the Garden down 3-1, that's – come on. I mean, with the way the Rangers play at home, that's not something you want to be doing. It's going to be tough to take two in a row against this Rangers team, because this is probably the best Rangers team I've seen in a long, long time, offensively, defensively, and goaltending. They have all three. They're good on the penalty kill, as you said, and they're also good on the power play. So you have to, I think you have to take both of them, and you go back to New York and you take your chances. Hopefully you can squeak one out and you force seven. Obviously it's going to be back in New York as well, but at least you get to seven. That's the thing. But the main point for the Carolina Hurricanes is stop taking penalties. Stop taking penalties. I understand like a bad slashing call, you know, that happens, hooking or, you know, roughing or whatever, but the whole tripping thing where the guy's past you and you're trying to get the puck and your stick goes right between his legs, that can't happen because the Rangers are going to score. And it was crazy because they scored on the first two power plays in the first game, and the Rangers didn't score on the power play in the second game. And the Carolina was still taking these penalties, basically saying, yeah, just try us. Just try us. They tried you in game one and they dominated you. And you kind of got back and forth, but the Rangers still won the game in game two. And now you're down 2-0 going home, which is definitely a must win in game three. But then if you win, game four might be a must win as well.
How do you see this series ending?
I think it goes six is my guess. I think it's going to be one of those. They're going to win. They're going to win maybe one at home. Then they're going to lose, go down 3-1, and they'll surprise you at the Garden. And then they'll lose at home.
Gotcha. But I will tell you this. The way the Rangers have gotten the luck, I would say this, that they look like the team that might be destiny, to be perfectly honest with you. I think, truthfully, that you win a game like that, you got the Garden rocking, everything looks amazing, and it was a game that if they didn't win that one, Will, you're going back to Raleigh, and now – the pressure immediately goes on to the Rangers. All the pressure is on the Canes right now.
Absolutely. And, yeah, that's why I said earlier, if it's 1-1, if you're Carolina and you're saying to yourself, yeah, we stole one at the Garden, and now we play in a place that we barely lose games, and we could be up 3-1 going back to the Garden. But that's not how it worked. And now you got to win. You just got to win either – you got to win at least one. If you don't win one at home, you're done. But I think you have to win both of them.
I agree with you. Yeah, for sure. Particularly depending on how game three goes. I think the Rangers are going to go for the jugular. This isn't a team that wants to play with their food, as you'd say, right? Let's get this shit done. Let's keep going. They've won six consecutive games. And you need a little bit of luck on their side. The Canes easily should have won yesterday. It's so many chances, over 100 shots on goal. You got to win a game like that. And to lose that one in that kind of fashion, it just sucks.
It's tough for them. But, yeah, we'll see what they have come tomorrow in game three. I think they need to come out like how my Dallas Stars did the other night, but didn't continue that. And we'll talk about that later. But that's what they have to do. They can't get behind to start the game and then claw back. But, you know, what the Capitals try to do, and the Capitals obviously don't have the star power that Carolina does, but you have to get ahead and put pressure on this team. That's the only way you're going to beat them.
I agree with you, man. Okay, so let's get into the Bruins. They are right now up down 3-1, rather, to Florida at the end of the second period in game two. Boston beat them up pretty good in game one. But before we go there, How about we talk about the game seven that Boston won in overtime against Toronto?
That was such a – that all I wrote in my notes, and I have a couple other things, but that is such a Maple Leafs way to lose. Like, straight into overtime, like a minute and 50 seconds, and you just your season's over. They scratch and claw that whole game. They held a one goal lead, you know, starting the third period because they scored early in the third period. But it was 10 minutes later that the Bruins scored. And if you're a Leafs fan, you're like, here we go again. Jeremy Swayman has been unbelievable in the series after they said, hey, we're not going to be doing this whole switch thing with Linus Ullmark. Swayman's the hot hand. We're going to stick with him. And watching that game, who else but Pasternak's going to score that game winner in game seven? And going into that, you know, talking about that game, that was their momentum going into game one. And look what happened in game one. They absolutely shit on the Panthers, who are a very, very good defensive team with a very solid goalie. And they just did whatever they wanted. So the Bruins, they're losing right now. I think that game, that series is easily going seven in my mind. Another seven-game series for the Bruins. But it's all like who wants to play the Rangers in the next round, because that's what it's looking like right now.
For Florida, was that a game where they had just been off for a little bit and they were rusty, whereas Boston had that emotional win and then the quick turnaround to get down to Florida?
See, you know, we talk about it in the NFL, rest versus rust kind of thing. But there was no rust for the Rangers, who had a lot more time off than the Hurricanes did, and they kind of put it to them in game one. Obviously, they Carolina clawed back as well, but I don't believe in the rest versus rust thing. The Florida Panthers are a very good team, very good offensively team, and very good on the power play. It was more of the momentum, the high of the beating the Maple Leafs in seven, and just continued into the game one.
And two, as we know, that was just set up for Boston to go steal that game. And I think now we're going to officially have the series that we want. Seven games sounds like it could be it. I think Florida's by far the better team, but Boston has been there, done that. And when you've got a hot goalie like Swayman and you've got Pasternak doing what he can do, you know that they are very eager to return serve on what Florida did to them last year in round one.
Absolutely. And the thing that impressed me the most about game one is out of the core three of Pasternak, Marchand, and DeBrusque, it was all the third and fourth line that was scoring these goals, which was impressive. And that's what you need as the Bruins, because everybody's keying on those top three guys. And they weren't doing much in game one. And the third and fourth line stepped up. And as you said, Swayman has just been unbelievable in goal. So the Bruins have to keep going forward. But I think the series is easily going seven. I could see both teams splitting and then 1-1-1 in Florida. Whoever wins game seven obviously goes to the Eastern Conference Finals.
What does Toronto do this offseason?
Outside of Matthews, I mean, I would assume you blow it up, but also they don't really have, like, we talked about Samsonov, and Samsonov has his ups and downs. They really don't have a solid goaltending. Their defense is kind of weak. You have Austin Matthews, who was the best player in hockey this year. But they have a couple older guys, like Tavares is getting old. He's obviously the captain. Probably got a couple years left in him. But, you know, you have Spezza too. It's more of an older team on the side besides Matthews. So maybe he's trying to get younger and one of those things, not like rebuild, but kind of like reload and maybe be a lower seed that makes the playoffs next year. Maybe even miss the playoffs and try to get a good draft pick. It might be time for the Maple Leafs, because I know their fans are tired, man. They're tired. I feel bad as a Cowboys fan, but not winning since, like, what, the 60s? That's pretty brutal for a hockey country.
It's a tortured fucking fan base right now, man.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else on these series, or do you want to transition over into the West?
No, let's transition into the West.
All right, let's do it. So the Avalanche won an insane game last night. I need to get your thoughts on that. But let's talk about first how the Stars won Game 7 against Vegas in round one, the second game seven that we had in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
So this was one of the more defensive battles that you see in the NHL playoffs. Both goalies played well. Ottinger and Aiden Hill both played well. And the funniest thing, I don't know if you saw the tweet or whatever, one of the guys on Dallas tweeted. So they're calling, so his name is Jacob Ottinger. So usually they call him Ott or whatever. But you ever see that commercial with the Wallers and the gold? Bad boy, Duncan!
Love that commercial. So
yeah, good. So they're calling Ottinger Duncan because nothing gets by him. So he's just going by Duncan now, which I find is the most hysterical thing ever. But it was one of those things that it was just whoever scores that last goal is going to win the game. And that's what happened for Dallas. And they couldn't get Riley Fasca back fast enough. He's been out since game two. He comes back, and guess what? He scores the game winner. He's one of their better goal scorers for the Dallas Stars. Obviously, you have Robertson. But Fasca came in. He scored that winning goal and won game seven. And going into that game, you know, we talked about the momentum for the Bruins going to the, after they win game seven in overtime, and they just put a hurting on Florida. It looked like it was going that way in the first period. Every shot, every goal they had was basically an open net, a pass to an open net goal. It was 3-0 at the end of one. And you're looking at this team, Wyatt Johnson scores his fifth of the playoffs. And that's a pretty high number until you see that Nichushkin has 8 in these playoffs, a second-line winger for Colorado. But the more impressive thing to me is, and we talked about it before, that the Colorado goaltending has been up and down all year. Their defense outside of Cal McCarr and probably Toews has been very shaky. But when they needed to stand on their head, I kind of compared it to the Kentucky Wildcats basketball defense. They made the stops when they needed to. And you just let that offense do the thing. That offense is a juggernaut with McKinnon and Landeskog. And you can put Cal McCarr there as an offensive weapon as a defender. That was one of those that's a bad, bad loss for Dallas. But the thing with Dallas for me, I picked them to win the Stanley Cup because how balanced they are offensively, defensively, and goaltending, minus Igor Shesterkin. I think Ottinger is the second best goalie in this playoffs right now. The thing is, Dallas got down 2-0 to the defending Stanley Cup and champions, and they said, it's not a problem. We got to play our game. So I think this is another series that goes 7, and it's going to come down to the goal. In all honesty, it's going to come down to the goaltending. Can Ottinger still be the Duncan that we need him to be? And can Georgiev at least be good to great-ish? And these offenses are going to do what they've done all year.
Georgiev was great in the overtime. A question for you. Do you get the sense that this is a kind of game that Colorado really doesn't mind playing because they know that they can score? Or it's just they got to flip that switch.
Yeah, that's been the Colorado team. And it's very, as the next team we'll talk about, they're very comparative to the Edmonton Oilers. They don't care how many goals they give up. It's we know we can score 7 at any point. Try to score 8 and beat us. That's the type of hockey they played all year. That's kind of more of a West hockey per se. But it just this is the Avalanche team, and to be honest with you, they're a very scary team to play. And if I'm anybody in the West, and we said this in the first round series, like I don't want to play Colorado.
As far as Colorado goes, we know they have the firepower. If they were to lose this series, would it simply be because Georgiev has a meltdown and they lose one of these high scoring games?
I think it could be one of those games that they lose 6-5 and it kind of gets in their head a little bit. Like, we scored 5 and we lost. But I think it comes down to their efficiency on the power play and getting one past Ottinger. I don't see any of these games being 2-1, 1-0. I don't see that at all. But if Colorado loses one of those games that's a high scoring game, that's 10 goals in the game, I can see that being in their heads and going forward, especially if you go forward, you make it to the Stanley Cup Finals. You're playing an East team where defense is what win championships in the East. So it could be one of those things, but I think this series goes 7 as well. Dallas has no problem going down 2-0 and then going to Colorado and winning 2 games. They did in Vegas, so I could see them doing it in Colorado too. I would never count Dallas out. So, I mean, we'll see. I'm so excited for this series. It just sucks that they play at like 9:50 at night. But 8:50
years. That game were not even, you couldn't even go to it because the Rangers game went deep into double OT.
Yeah. I mean, also, they had the Rangers game and there's 37 seconds left and they have the Dallas pre-skate going on. I'm like, what's happening? That's a tie game right now.
That was bad. Oh, ESPN almost. Oh, that was bad. You can't do that. Let's talk Canucks Oilers. They start their series tonight. Give me your thoughts on the first couple games. I imagine we'll get back and reconvene as this series moves along. But what are your early impressions from this series? Who gets the advantage going up tonight and maybe through game two?
So my whole thought on this series is what's going to break first? Because obviously DeSmith is back, who's technically their backup, but Sivos has been playing well and won them that first round series by having 9 career starts, but winning a playoff series, which is very incredible and amazing to hear. And I guess they're riding with the hottish hand, I would say, because he did give up some bad goals, but obviously he's not a Swayman, he's not a Shesterkin, Ottinger. We can go on forever, but I guess they're riding the hot hand. But both these offenses, obviously I'm favoring Edmonton as well, with Dreisaitl and Hyman and obviously McDavid. But also the Canucks have Pettersson. They have JT Miller and a couple other guys too that can put the pucks in net. So this is, in my opinion, what goalie blinks first is going to lose them games and probably lose them the series.
Does the home team get the first two games at home, or how do we see this series shifting back?
I think it's going to be 1-1. Each home series is going to be 1-1. You're looking at 2-2 going into game 5. That's my thought. I think Edmonton at home wins that first game like 5-2. Then they lose like 4-3. And the same thing going to Vancouver. They win like 5-2. Then they lose, 3-2 kind of thing. It's a tale of different games for both teams that play basically the same hockey, and they have the same skill players. Little benefit of the doubt to Edmonton with the best player in hockey and McDavid. But defensively, obviously you have Quinn Hughes, who's one of the best defenders in hockey, but it all comes down to the goaltending. Which goaltender blinks first is the problem. I don't think Sivos has ever seen McDavid play hockey before live, like in net, so it could be a little bit of an issue for him. But Skinner has been up and down too for all year for Edmonton. So when you have Pettersson and JT Miller on that power play, it's a really scary thing for the Vancouver Canucks as well.
Awesome deal, my man. Lots of fun action going on here in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Obviously, back where you reside, I know the New York Ranger fans are out in full force. A lot of them frauds, if you like to say. So.
Yep, frauds. Yep. I mean, and just I said the thing to my buddy Chad the other day. I might have said it to you as well. And the first series win after they swept the Capitals. Like, I go on Instagram the next morning, and there's like 27 stories of sweep, 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 sweep. I knew like 6 of them were Ranger fans. Like, I didn't see any of those other people post all year. So it's just crazy how the Ranger fans are. And you look at it too, and I respect the Rangers. I don't hate them. I don't hate their fans. Very good organization. They've been for the last decade. Obviously, they had their moments in the playoffs where they slip up, and it happens. I'm a Cowboys fan, so I know a lot about that, Sean.
Well documented.
But like, the Rangers could be down 2-1 at home in game 5. It's a church there. You could be sitting on the 300s on the other side, and I could be like, hey, Sean, what's going on, buddy? And you could hear me because it's like a church in there. So I'm like, this is playoff hockey. You're down a goal with like 15 minutes left. Like, why are we not cheering for our boys right now? It's just, it's all corporate stuff there. And it kind of bothers me as a fan of a hockey team that is all basically drunk people. My team's very bad, and it's one of the loudest arenas in hockey. Because
you know what it is, man, is it's very it's how I would compare the Knicks crowd too. You have a large section, I think more than you're giving credit for, that are diehard fans that care so much about the team. But you also do have your corporate types. You have your celebrities that are there because it's an event, right? And I think Ranger fans are very intelligent about how they watch their team. I think Knicks fans are very intelligent about how they watch their team. But I think there's a lot of fair weather fans that are very happy to jump on the bandwagon when things are convenient. But you can't deny this. They've been awesome in this postseason so far. And I was wrapped up in game 2 last night. I tweeted from the account a couple times. I was locked in. That game 7 up in Boston on Saturday night was just phenomenal, particularly after getting Nuggets Wolves game 1 as the appetizer. It was fucking great. So playoff hockey, man, it's something different. It can bring the most casual of fans in and suck you in.
Yeah, it's one of the best playoffs in all professional sports. And right now, we'll segue a little bit, and I got a couple questions for you before you get on with the CEO. Listen, I'd never seen Madison Square Garden this loud. And it's actually having me watch NBA games, which I haven't done since the early 2000s. And it's actually really fun to watch. And one of my questions for you is, the fact that they don't take into the playoffs for awards, not saying he would win MVP, but in my mind, Jalen Brunson would be first team All-NBA.
I mean, he's done things that only, like, Michael Jordan and Wilt have done in the postseason of, like, four consecutive 40-point games. He's been amazing. And everyone's trying to stop him, and nobody can. They are the perfect combination of epitomizing what New York City is all about. And, you know, we're talking Rangers and going back to 1994, and there's a certain style of play that New York fans love, obviously. And the Knicks embody that. But they also have – they can score with anybody, too. And I think we saw that in the Philly series. But I think the Garden is – it's just so alive right now that it's an event. They've been so starved for so long to not just make the playoffs, but make the playoffs and have a legitimate chance to go deep into May. So Brunson, for me, has been one of the best players in the league all year. He's not going to win MVP. Jokic won it today. But as far as truly the definition of valuable, I don't know who's more valuable to their team's success.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. And obviously, I don't know much about the NBA like you and Tom do, but I'm looking at this Knicks team, and obviously, you know, I call it the Villanova Knicks with Hart and DiVincenzo. Watching those guys play at Villanova, it was just it's just beautiful the way they play basketball together. And they're doing it right now at the pro level, which is very nice to see. But, you know, what a time to be like a New York sports fan. Obviously, I'm a Yankee fan. The Yankees are going to be, what, 13, 12 games over 500. The Mets have their little runs in them. Knicks are in the playoffs. The Rangers are in the playoffs. You got to be excited for Aaron Rodgers. You got to be excited for how that Giants defense is going to be a total U-Haul difference this year. Obviously, you have to figure out who's going to play quarterback, but you got Malik Nabers, probably my favorite wide receiver in the draft. So it's excitement all around if you're a New York sports fan and living close to New York and growing up in New York my whole life. It makes me very happy, even though I'm not a fan of those teams. It's good for the state.
It definitely is. You know, by proxy, obviously, down here as a transplant from the Western Connecticut area that grew up basically in Westchester County's backyard. But it's great. And you see how alive the Garden is, as I was saying. And I talk to people and I explain to people down here. It's like, you just don't know what it's like when New York City's teams are killing it. Like, it's so good. And you had the Islanders even make the playoffs this year.
Yep.
You know, there's another basketball team that I'm a fan of that I don't really want to talk about right now, but
yeah.
St. John's is getting their recruits and their transfers. So yeah, listen, New York sports has been down for a long time. And, you know, I don't think Met fans are ever going to jump on the Yankee bandwagon. I don't think Yankee fans are ever going to really jump on the Met bandwagon, but we know the teams that run the city. It's Yankees predominantly, even though I think it's a little bit more, definitely not 50-50. I would say it's probably like, what would you say, 65-35, 60-40?
I was going to say 70-30, to be honest, with how the Yankees. I mean, especially getting nuts. Soto. Yeah, so.
Yeah, the city gets pretty nuts when the Mets are good, but I think when the Yankees are good, nothing's better. But we know the hockey team is the Rangers and the basketball team is the Knicks.
It's the Knicks. That's basically what it is. And when they're all doing amazing, it's really fun to watch in all aspects, even if you're a casual. Even if you're not, you know, I listen to other sports radios too, the Dallas Sports Radio. And even the guy in Dallas today is like, I'm not a Knicks fan, but they're a fun team to watch. They play with more grit than anybody.
Impossible to not like. They're impossible
for sure. So, Shoney, hopefully we can talk next week when we get into some, hopefully game sevens here in the second round of the playoffs. Look forward to talking about that. Let's see if the Rangers can sweep again. That would be a crazy story, sweeping back-to-back games going into the Eastern Conference Finals. Obviously, a lot of work to do. As Stephen A. Smith likes to say, let's do that hockey.
Let's do that hockey, brother. Really good job. Great analysis by you. And everybody, we'll be coming back with part two of the pod to talk a little bit of NBA postseason with the CEO. Will, take care, man.
Take care.
All right, everybody. It's part two of the pod. Thanks to Will for talking a little NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. But now this is where the magic is made. The CEO is back. Tom, we got a lot of NBA to discuss, my man. How we doing?
I think we should do the transition where it's just like the Stone Cold Steve Austin music and I just come and fucking shit up, because this is where our bread is buttered. You guys can do all your cute little hockey shit, which I love, by the way, and I'm only busting balls. You guys did an amazing job, but this is us right here, man. This is the NBA. This is our zone.
This is the fucking league, man.
It really is, man. This is the soap opera league. And let's get right in and talk about it, because there's a lot to talk about. I will say this. I feel like I say this every year during the playoffs, but I genuinely don't have a feel. Like, a lot of the series, like, for example, the Celtics series, I know the Cavs won, but I feel like you and I can both comfortably say that the Celtics are going to win. But for the rest of the series, I just genuinely don't know. And I feel like in the second round, that doesn't happen as often.
Yeah, because you usually get one, you have one super team, I'll use that term, that's around and really is, it's just a foregone conclusion. Maybe Boston's that. We thought maybe Denver could be that. We're going to talk about that series.
Well, that's the thing.
The complete opposite in that one. And then you look at the Thunder and Mavs. You know, that's 1-1. There's too many good players on Dallas for that series to be a sweep. So I'm with you, dude. There's not a lot of feel. But one thing I do feel damn good about is that the Knicks, no matter what adversity they face, no matter what injuries that are thrown in their face, no matter how much bitching and moaning the opposing team does, they keep winning these knockdown, drag-out, absolute fucking brawls. And the Knicks are up 2-0 with Game 3 tonight in Indiana.
It's both of those games, man. We were either recording during one or both of the games, and when we were recording during that time of the game, which was like second, third quarter, both times, if you asked me, I would have said we would have lost. Like, they just look sloppy all over the place. Kind of like they did in the Philly series, but they're playing a team that can just score up and down in bunches, and they have really gotten it together in the fourth quarters. It has been amazing to watch, and a thing that I wrote down was, if really it wasn't for Anthony Edwards, the world would be talking about the incredible run that I feel like just isn't being talked about enough because of that Jalen Brunson is going on.
Well, there should be room for two of them. You know, there really should be, because both storylines, I think, are pretty much on par. Obviously, Ant is this transcendent superstar who's taking the league by storm. But you know what? Brunson was a second-round pick, and we've seen Brunson have success in the past. We saw it as recently as 2 years ago in Luka's absence, taking Dallas to the West semifinal. But listen, man, this is a completely different level he's operating on right now. He's doing things in the playoffs that the only other names you can comp to are Michael Jordan, LeBron James, and maybe one or two others, like Wilt, like Jesus Christ.
He's already scored more playoff points for the Knicks than Carmelo did in his entire career, and he's been with the team for,
is his second year.
2 years. Last year, they won one series and then got bounced, and this year they're in their second series. He's already got over 500 points, and he's beaten Melo out in a very quick period of time.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, Melo didn't have a lot of chances, but this is something
only
that
three,
Knicks
believe
been,
it or not.
What's that?
Melo, I'm looking at Melo on StatMuse right now. He only played for the Knicks. He only played, according to this, 4 plus 5 is 9. Plus 12 is, he's only played 21 games in the playoffs.
I believe that, because you had that run when you got him. I think they made it or in the 2010-11,
yeah.
And then they got swept again the next couple years, but they only made the second round once with him.
Yeah, and I remember that second round because I think that was when J.R. Smith swung an elbow at somebody's head and the Celtics ended up winning that series.
No, that was the Indiana series.
Oh, yes, you're right. They still won that series and then went on to lose to the Celtics.
They beat Boston in the first round.
Oh, I'm flipping them. I'm flipping
them. That's what ended Boston's big three, actually.
Wow.
They lost to Indiana.
At least we got that on our resume. But let's get back into the current Knicks, because I don't want to have to think about those old Knicks anymore. I mean, Russillo said it on his podcast, just to put it in perspective. The only player who has ever been so relied on in scoring that's ever had any success in the playoffs where there's really no other options is Allen Iverson in 2001. Every other player that he named lost in the first round.
Absolutely, dude. And this is the thing with him. There's a certain magic to his game. You know, there's things that he's doing on the basketball court right now with his toughness, his shot making, that you don't see very often, especially from guys his size. And I will finish my statement with this. There's not a tougher motherfucker than him. And when you need, no matter what his stats say, when you need a big shot in the fourth quarter and the other team is starting to make a little bit of a run like Indiana's done in game one and in game two and what Philly was doing in that series, every single time Jalen Brunson is going to rise to the occasion. And that has to give his teammates so much trust and so much belief that they're going to win. And it has to really stick a fucking dagger through the other team's heart, because these are not easy shots that he's making. He's making some tough, contested, turnaround, mid-range jumpers, threes as the shot clock is expiring. He's a bad man, dude. He's a bad man.
That's really all you can do to describe him. Let's talk about the rest of the Knicks. First of all, we are just like we were last year and just like we really did in the first series in the playoffs. We are absolutely dominating the offensive glass. Just they might as well not even try and grab the rebound. If it doesn't go in, let us get another shot at it. Because, I mean, Josh Hart, I've never, even Dwayne Wade, Michael Jordan, couple others, I don't think I've ever seen a guard rebound this well. He's like Rodman in a guard form. He's an animal. And then they are just digging in their heels defensively. I mean, I love what they did with Halliburton in the first game. They let him get a little bit more in the second game, but what they're doing on the glass and defensively has been incredible.
It is, and they're tough as nails, like I said. They make so many winning plays, and they just out-hustle you. They outclass the opponent. The common denominator from the Philly series and into the first two games this series is that a lot of these games could have gone either way. But we see, you know, the adage in the NFL is a lot more games are lost than won. In the NBA, a lot more games are won than lost, but you have to go take it. And in the postseason, the Knicks have just gone out and taken it. They've gotten the loose ball. They've gotten the extra rebound.
They are by far.
They will just do so many intangible things on the court that contribute to winning, more so than their opponents.
Absolutely. They are by far, and I'm even going to throw Minnesota in this just because we haven't even seen any adversity out of them. They haven't lost the game in the playoffs yet, but they are the toughest team by far in every single way that word can be used, whether it's on the offensive boards, whether or not, I mean, they have been down multiple times, double digits in this series, and they just find a way to make it close and claw their way back in by the fourth quarter, and then it's winning time, and Brunson takes over, and like you said, they just are more organized and make more cohesive plays at the end of the game than the other team does, and all we got to do is clean up our free throws. We're getting to the line, but we're still missing them.
If Indiana shoots it from the free throw line like they did in game two, you don't have to worry about it, because that was atrocious what Indiana did in game two. I will also say this. I never, ever have had more confidence in a non-superstar shooting the ball in a big spot than what I've seen DiVincenzo.
Oh, my God. And that's the thing. For the first three quarters, he makes you want to pull your hair out with the turnovers and the missed shots. But then he comes in the fourth quarter and hits everything. And not to mention, he has been a dog on defense. I mean, he's primarily guarding Halliburton, and he has just been killing him. It's just like he's his shadow on every single play. But then, you know, missing OG and Mitchell, I guess we'll segue into that. He's going to miss game three. It's a hamstring. I don't know the severity of the injury, but I'm hoping that we can get him back for game four, because he is such a cog.
It didn't look good, and hamstrings are not something you can fuck around with. They don't have to say how long he's out for, because unlike Mitchell Robinson, it may not be season-ending, but it sucks, man, because the Knicks, I believe the stat is 21-4 when he plays, which is just crazy. But that's an injury that might be the one that flips the series, because obviously we know Brunson, you can't lose him at all. But Hart, DiVincenzo, they're both.
I mean, if
incredible.
We lose Brunson, we're a lottery team.
If your team, with how thin it already is at that four position, I mean, losing Ananobi and the production and defense that he gives you, that's what made the game two win so important, because if you don't win that game, and not to mention the 15 minutes that Brunson missed and did his best incarnation of the Willis Reed moment coming out of the tunnel there, you know, this is a series that's going back to Indiana 1-1, and kind of that morale is sucked out of the heart of the Knicks. But you get that
morale, very timely.
And let's go.
Yeah, sorry, I gave you a little Kendrick Lamar reference. I don't know if you picked
up
on that.
I like that. Ken, by the way, I need to get your thought on this whole beef shit.
Well, here's my thoughts. I've been talking to my future sister-in-law about it because Michaela could care less. First of all, don't tell me that there's not a group chat with these three. I'm going to throw J. Cole in there, who you know is my favorite artist of all time. But
yeah, but his, but he's
got a little leg.
A lot of shots. That's
yeah,
bad.
Yeah. And he hasn't done anything about it. Doesn't look good because I know lyrically he could flame some people, and he did
already. And then he apologized for it.
For the
That's
2 seconds. I forgot what something 7-minute drill. I don't know what it was, the name of the song, but it no longer exists. Only in our memories, but. My first thing is, don't tell me that there's not a group chat somewhere with these three in it and that there's not going to be a fucking album or there's going to be money to be had off of this rap battle. That's number one. And number two, when we're doing rap battles now, is this what we're doing? Is we're just making shit up without anything? I mean, Drake is over here stumbling over his words. I love him too, but... You know, you go over here, Kendrick Lamar calls you a pedophile. Again, we don't know if that's true or not. So I kind of don't really like rap battles where we don't know if it's true, because then, Sean, you and I can have a rap battle and I could call you a mass murderer. That doesn't make it true. Did I still really win?
Yeah, well, no, absolutely
that's,
not.
And then,
Drake was planting some shit too.
Oh, no. Don't get me wrong. Drake was as well. And it's just like, are we going to make shit up? But then Drake fucked up because Kendrick alluded to the fact that he was a pedophile, didn't say anything, and then Drake comes out here with that Millie Bobby line. It's like, bro, you're basically just incriminating yourself, whether or not you are, by saying a name that Kendrick didn't even say, which has been said in the press before.
Were you an Always Sunny fan? Did you ever watch Always Sunny?
I've seen it. You know, it's on my list. I've just never gotten around to it.
There was a great meme circulating relating to that. The gang holds a like a children's pageant, like a beauty pageant, and Frank has to go in and says we should write a song about how we don't diddle kids. And Matt goes, the worst thing you can do during an allegation about diddling kids is to say we don't diddle kids.
And write a song about that.
And that was going on when Drake did that Millie Bobby Brown, and I was like, dude, come on, man.
Some of the rhymes are clever. I have to say, I feel like Drake's not getting enough credit for, especially on Family Matters, where he flames Kendrick, and then he's like, oh, I forgot, fucking Rick Ross is going at me too. Let me just light him up on the side, because who the fuck cares about Rick Ross?
What's your favorite song right now? Mine's Euphoria.
I like Euphoria. I mean... I really like Family Matters, and I know that there's some things in there that aren't valid, but all the songs have some validities to them. The only thing that kills me is just like, I feel like the Kendrick shit that Drake's saying is much closer to the truth than the shit that Kendrick's saying about Drake, which is kind of annoying me, where it's like the pedophile thing and the 11-year-old kid. It's like, so now we're just going to fucking grab the low-hanging fruit and make shit up. But aside from that, I think Kendrick won because
there's been some great content out there. But yeah, I agree with you. It definitely feels like there's a group chat. J. Cole, man, I know he's your boy, and I like
it's
J. Cole
tough.
A lot too, but it that's tough for what his PR has taken a big time hit. Looks like a pussy.
I mean, yeah, I didn't say it. I'm not going to deny it, but you know, I mean, it's a tough spot to be in.
Not saying he is, just saying he looks like it.
My thing is, like, what the fuck is Future? I thought, like, I don't know, maybe Drake and maybe Future agrees with Kendrick that Drake only comes down to Atlanta when he needs some clout. But, I mean, I didn't expect that Future, you know, to kind of pop the whole thing off.
I know, I didn't either. I also respect Metro just being in this where, like, I'm just going to lay some beats and whoever wants them can take them.
Yeah, Drake didn't like that, and he went ahead and said it.
Yep.
Which I thought was, I mean, you also got to expect that if you're Metro, where it's like Drake's just going to call me a producer and that's that.
Yeah, Which is fine.
Yeah. But for the rap beef, for me, it's like I like it because we're getting good music. I don't like how neither rapper is going off 100% facts. That kind of pisses me off because I feel like you set a precedent there. And then for me, it's like, can we just get the album that we've been hearing about for fucking however long now?
It'd be nice. I'd take it.
Yeah.
I think that's eventually where this ends.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that there's going to be, I mean, Coachella's coming up. Maybe they'll come out, all three of them, and kiss each other, have a three-way kiss. I don't know. Apparently, there was a shooting outside. I hope the person's all right. There was a shooting outside of Drake's
estate. The Chinese spot in Toronto.
But, right. But yeah, there was no, I don't think there was any connections. But, you know, they had to. I mean, that somebody, if someone got shot in Canada, it could have been the other side. I don't know anywhere else in Canada besides Toronto and Montreal, as Chai is crying at the door, but it could have been anywhere else.
He wants to give his thoughts.
That's Chai. That's the girl.
Chai, sorry.
She wants fucking attention.
She wants to give her thoughts.
She wants attention is what she wants. And you know what? She's not that bad, so I'm going to give it to her. This is going to be live podcasting. I'm going to let my cat in, okay?
I love it. I love it. Chai, welcome to the pod.
Come on in, pretty.
Love to get your thoughts.
Don't just look at me. Come on in if you're going to fucking do that at the door. But yeah, back to Drake. I mean, I appreciate the lyrics, but I just hate when falsities get involved and you just start talking out of your ass.
Well, yeah, because you always want the, in the history of rap battles, you always want the, you want it to be as valid and personal as possible. I also think there's certain things that like, they're not going to touch and they're not going to go.
Near, I don't know. I guess. I mean, you don't know what you don't know, but they've gone pretty far here.
I mean, if you go the pedo route, you know, that's pretty far. But I also think because he knows it's not true, so.
Yeah, but then, I mean, Drake going after the fucking, his Kendrick's relationship with his significant other, you know, that's nothing to shake a stick at.
No, again, I just don't know how much of it's in good fun or if any of this is actually like legitimate, you know?
I don't know, Sean. I mean, like, if I accuse you of being a woman beater and then you were like, hey, what the fuck? And I was like, it's all in good fun. I don't know.
I hear you, man. But like you said, like, I think there's probably some group chat going on here.
I agree.
It's content shit, dude. That's where I lean with it. And yeah, I mean, listen, there's a lot of allegations going on right now, but I just don't know the merit to how legit it is. I just hope nothing comes violent of it, but I think it's been great for the music industry for damn sure. I mean, you're getting a weekend where you're getting Saturday and Sunday, you're getting diss tracks dropped. Like, that's pretty fucking dope.
Yeah. And the other thing, final thing on this is, it's like Kendrick released one of his songs like 5 minutes after Drake, where it's like, I know you're a great lyricist. Yeah, the only person I think could do that is Lil Wayne, maybe. So
I bet Prime M could do it.
Maybe in 5 minutes, but it's like I know how great Kendrick is. I'm not questioning that, nor am I questioning any of the three. But like 5 minutes, you put together that rap answering questions in 5 minutes. I don't know.
A little suspicious, right?
Exactly. It makes me think he's getting the lyrics a little early.
Just a little bit.
Exactly. And the picture thing was stupid too, but that's enough of that. As for Indy, the things I will say, TJ McConnell is amazing, but fuck him. Halliburton had a much better game. I love the pick and roll between him and Miles Turner. And for as much of a sieve as they are defensively, I've seen a lot of effort out of them. They are playing hard defense. Whether or not it's good is another thing, but they're playing hard.
Well, let's talk about McConnell, because Carlisle's made the decision in both games to pull him in crunch minutes. And I feel like he's the guy that's been given the Knicks, and Brunson in particular, the most physical and difficult time. Now, I understand Halliburton's your star and you got to go to him, but hey, we've seen a lot of role players in postseason history, NBA Finals history, kind of ride the hot hand. You know, I always think back to J.J. Barea in the playoffs in 2011 Finals. I mean, if you're trying to win.
Guess who his coach was, too.
I know exactly who his coach was. Do you think I made that? Do you think I made that comp out of thin air? Fuck that, man. I know what I'm talking
about. You're a pro,
about.
Baby.
I am. So it was just interesting to see Carlisle make that decision. If the game is close, which I expect all of these games to be, down late here in the fourth quarter, the last 5 minutes of the fourth quarter, I'm interested to see what route he goes with his lineup.
Totally agree with you. I mean, now is not the time for, you know, feelings. Now's the time to either win or lose. And sometimes you got to stick with the hot hand. And if Halliburton can't handle that, then you know what? You're not a winning player anyways.
And Halliburton has not been the same since his hamstring injury back in January. Yeah. So he's been good. I mean, game one, he was atrocious. Game two, he was much better, as you said. But he hasn't been the exact same player that we saw light up the first little bit of the season in the in-season tournament. So I would like to see them make some adjustments because, listen, the Knicks are still going to field a goddamn team. No matter how many players get hurt. Now, Tibbs might play literally 5.5 players, 48 minutes.
Might play four
if he has to. But you're going to have to make adjustments if you're Indiana. You can't just lean on the fact that the Knicks are losing guys left and right. You're going to have to make some winning decisions too late. And again, maybe game two was the final straw. I said, okay, if McConnell's playing well, like you said, fuck feelings. I'm going to play you, and we need to get a win. This is a must-win game for Indiana tonight.
Oh, of course. Of course it is. Quick prediction. I think Indy's going to win. What do you think?
Yeah, I do too. This has a lot of game three Knicks-Philly vibes to me. I think Indiana wins.
Plus the injuries on top of that too.
Right. I actually think Indy wins kind of easily tonight, but it's all set up for them to win this game. And then Sunday, you know, we'll see what happens. But if the Knicks win tonight, I mean, everything else is gravy.
Pack it in. Oh, man, if the Knicks win tonight, I might be insufferable. All right. We don't have to spend much time on the Cavs and Celtics. I think the Cavs last night, listen, all the questions that we had about Mobley and Garland, at least for one night, they answered them. They both played incredible. Mitchell is obviously on an all-time heater, and their bench players played really well, especially going on the road in Boston. But I don't know what they shot, but I know it was a really high percentage, and Boston just, there was a lid on the rim all day, especially for Derek White. I still think Boston gets this one in 5-6 the most.
This was game two of the Miami series.
Exactly.
Where Miami went nuclear from three.
But what's interesting is it's happened to the Celtics twice. Is it more than just, like I said last time on Phillip's Pod, a four-leaf clover shoved up their ass? Is it something the Celtics are doing in their defensive rotations? I mean, it's happened twice now in a matter of two series.
You know, I certainly think that you look at the two teams between Miami and Cleveland. Miami just has that magic about them, right? It doesn't matter what team they throw out there. They're capable of having one night where they go crazy and have contributions from guys you've never heard of. Whereas Cleveland does have Donovan fucking Mitchell. You do have Darius Garland. You do have Mobley. The reason that they've been so disappointing is because those players have been inconsistent with the exception of Mitchell, but they're capable of putting together a really good game. And they did. I think Boston, what frustrates people who are fans of the Celtics is you kind of don't have the right to mail in games like this because you haven't won a title yet. And listen, in the Miami series, it didn't matter. They came back in games 3, 4, and 5 and kicked the shit out of them. But you don't want these series to go long. You see what's happening with the Knicks and the Pacers, and whoever you end up drawing, you hope that series is a knockdown, drag out. You know, every team is getting the shit kicked out of them, and that it goes 7. Whereas the Celtics, it's just beneficial to keep the foot on the gas and win this series quickly, efficiently. And the more games you got to put on these guys, the more minutes you got to put on somebody like a Horford, it's not advantageous for them. And I think they carry themselves sometimes as a team that's won a lot, when in reality they haven't won anything outside of one Eastern Conference championship 2 years ago.
Yeah, I've got nothing else to add. They act, because you know what the thing is? It's like they've been there a bunch. They've never won, but it does feel like, even for me, like as not a Celtics fan, just knowing the NBA, it does feel like they have this aura of winning just because they've been there since, I don't know what, 2017, 2018. But you're right, yeah. They haven't won shit, and it's a new team.
Right, and it's, you know, Cleveland's not been great, and we saw what they had to do to overcome the Magic and win that series in 7. Mitchell's capable of winning playoff games on his own. That's why he's a star in this league. But you don't want to have a game where your defense plays that poorly and you for whatever reason forget to score the basketball. And Tatum, for me, just sometimes more of these goddamn mid-range jumpers. Take it to the fucking hole, mm-hmm. or hit your threes and get hot. And I'm tired of seeing Brown, too, having these games where he just doesn't look totally locked in.
Yeah, and I agree with you.
Sloppy basketball.
I agree with you. And I before last night and watching this game, I was all ready to come on and just say how great Jaylen Brown has looked, because he really has. But you're right.
Yeah.
Last night they took off, and I wanted to give him a million compliments. I mean, they fucking, between him and Derek White, I mean, Jaylen Brown has improved his ball handling leaps and bounds. You don't see him getting stripped after three dribbles anymore. He can get to the rim. He can get to his spots. But last night, man, the whole damn team fell asleep at the wheel. I fucking blame Mazzulla. I don't like his face.
Everyone's going to blame Mazzulla in Boston until he wins, and that's just going to be how it goes. I think Brown has a pretty short leash because of the $300 million max and some of the comments he's made. And so far,
he's earned it, except for last night.
Yeah, I expect him to get right back into it tomorrow.
I'm not worried about it. I got Celtics in five or six. What do you think, six or five?
I think it'll be six, but it won't feel
like five. Yeah, it'll feel like five, and then the deciding game, the Celtics will win by like 35, and then the Mitchell will start churning again.
That's what I expect. Yeah, they'll get one more. They'll get one in Cleveland, I think.
Yeah, and then right as it ends, it'll be Mitchell and all this stuff, like as if the last week and a half hasn't happened. That's just what it is in the NBA.
That's exactly what it is. It's just delaying the inevitable in that situation. Let's move to the West. Let's talk about the fucking Wolves. They lead the Nuggets 2-0. Game three tonight. We are talking on Friday afternoon. The series shifts to Minnesota, which is amazing, the fact that Minnesota took both games in Denver. They've got Denver looking completely like fools. Their defense is frustrating the hell out of them. You got Murray getting fined for throwing a goddamn heating pad on the floor to a referee. Jokic looked somewhat ordinary in these two games. And they didn't even have Rudy Gobert in game two, and they kicked the shit out of him. Ant's been a dog. The defense has been suffocating. Towns has been awesome. They get Gobert back tonight. Are we talking about a potential sweep here, Tom?
It'd be tough to see the champs go down in a sweep. I think they're going to get at least one to two of these games. But, this series has done a complete 180. I thought we were talking about the Wolves a couple days ago, getting one, maybe sneaking one or two of these out. I tweeted it out a couple of days ago where game one was kind of Ant's coming out party, if you didn't know about him already. And then game two was just the Wolves as a team's coming out party. Just the team defense, absolute dogs. I mean, Alexander Walker and the other guy's name deceives me.
Jaden McDaniels.
Those two are just basically carbon copies of each other. They're clones, and they just go out there and wreak absolute fucking havoc. It's incredible. And they can knock down a three. And I just love that. I feel like it needs to be mentioned that Conley, as a calming veteran presence point guard on this team, is so important. And I think it is just a major reason as to why they are where they are.
He's the stabilizer.
Exactly.
And he doesn't have to do much. But he kind of gets everything in order. He's like a great conductor, and you kind of have your alpha in Edwards.
Conley is like, if Edwards is Michael in The Godfather, then Conley's like Tom. He's like his consigliere.
That's a good one.
When he's like, calm it down. Like, we don't have to go 100 miles an hour right now. I'm just going to give you a little advice this time out. Let's just slow it down. Let's chew some clock. Like, stuff like that is what Conley's doing.
I love that comp. Any Godfather comp is good with me. I want to give Kyle Anderson his flowers,
too. At least
too.
You've seen The Godfather, thank God.
Of course I have. I've seen the first. I'm on Mark saying Godfather Part 2 is better than Godfather Part 1.
People that have that opinion, I can't argue with them.
They're both incredible.
I will say this before we continue. I got out of work early a couple of days ago, and I was trying to find something to watch, and I'm kind of into Star Wars, dude. I almost watched episode 2.
Oh, my God.
I just don't have that much time to commit to a full movie, but like I was like, I got nothing to watch, and I kind of want to see what happens next.
I'm mad from the other day because I did what I shouldn't have done, but I had to. I split it up. So I watched the first like hour on Monday night, and I watched the rest Tuesday morning. And you know, you get a little fuzzy from things. You should watch.
I try not to do that with movies that I actually care about. Like, I want to watch it cover to cover.
I would have liked to. I just didn't have many other options, particularly with the way that the sports is right now. It's like we're doing pods, you know, on a pretty regular basis. It's not good for me to miss the Knicks, and that's what would have happened.
We're also talking about this Star Wars podcast that we are going to put out. This is going to be in the past by the time we put it out.
That's okay. People can look back to episode 427, the two-parter of NHL and NBA, and they'll get a little taste of what the Star Wars pod will be. But where the hell were we? Kyle Anderson, really, really awesome game in game two, playing that role that Gobert was not present for. And he just gave them a different look. He gave them another tall and athletic forward guard combo. And you can do different things with him. I think that's what stands out the most to me, bro, looking at Minnesota, is they're so versatile. And they can play you in so many ways. And that's why I think Chris Finch, if he doesn't win, I think is a shame. And he should win Coach of the Year.
He's got to win. He's playing on a fucking torn plane. He's coaching on a torn patella.
He is. Now, remember, this is supposed to be a regular season.
I know.
But, again, this
exceptions should be made.
It's him or Dagnall from OKC. But Chris Finch, with this roster and this collection of really good players and some egos, too, has done a phenomenal job of bridging how they want to play, from whether they're going to just beat you with the size of the centers to are we going to go a little bit more guard play. Sometimes Conley hardly plays at all. But the end of the story is, in the NBA playoffs, you're going to win based off of having a great player. And Anthony Edwards, this right now, is playing at an all-time level in this playoffs.
So Murray, for me, clearly looks hurt, right?
He looks hurt, and he also looks really frustrated.
Well, being hurt and getting fucking just put – he's basically trying to play basketball in a telephone booth the way those two guys are guarding him. I mean, I would probably be pretty pissed off too. But what the Wolves have done, in my opinion, I mean, Joker's going to get his, but they've definitely diminished him a little bit, and then Murray being hurt. But they've completely eliminated all of those players that were complete stars in their roles last year when they won the title. I'm talking the KCPs, the Brons, the Aaron Gordons. Those guys, it's just like, nope, you guys are non-existent. Your names are not even going to be said during these games. We're taking everything.
It's a really good point. Yeah, they've really not been able to get anything going. And you think about a guy like Bruce Brown from last year, how valuable would he be in the series? Would he even be able to be the best version of himself from last year with the way that this Wolves team and the is
from
constructed? The defensive plays.
From the tip, honestly, for me, it's crazy you say this because you talk about Denver and the altitude, but the second that ball tips off, it feels like the Timberwolves just suck all the air out of the Nuggets, and they're just playing diminished.
Because they're tenacious about it. It's frenetic.
From the tip, though.
Yeah, I know, bro, but that's what they do. They're not a team that wants to ease into the game. They're ready to fucking go. And you're right. In Denver, that never happens. And I think that's what's made this so remarkable. It's not just that they've won. It's how they've won.
I completely agree with you. Soy is in the room, by the way. Do you want to say anything? You got any takes?
Soy, what are your thoughts on the Wolves? Is Anthony Edwards your favorite player?
He says that he came to me in my sleep a couple of months ago and said, Anthony Edwards looks like somebody. And that's what put the idea in my head.
So this is Soy's doing. This was Soy's idea here.
You taking credit for that? Yeah, he is. He said you were wearing your CPAP that night, and I made sure of it, and so that you could actually remember it.
Sounds like a cat taking credit.
Yeah, I mean, but listen, see, he's a good guy, and he said also that he thinks Will is the biggest WFAN caller ever. You met Will before. Why the fuck would you say that? You've met Will.
By the way, we need to create a segment, Douchebags Plays of the Week.
Yeah, I spoke to Will's teammate on the phone, Chad, the big hitter, the big poppy, the big red poppy of the douchebags. So, I mean, we might have to have him come on. We'll do maybe on Picks Boss. I'll have Will just give us a rundown of the stats from last game.
That'd be good, because if people might, I don't know how you can find these numbers, but listen, I'm sure they're out there.
Should I just, maybe I'll create like a website, like a WordPress, where I just plug in all the stats. I say I'm going to do that, and then I'm not. I'm not going to follow through.
Of course not.
I'm an ideas guy.
People don't need to know that. I think that that's something that you could pretty much pull off without having to actually do it.
Sure.
Anything more on the series?
Only question I'm going to ask is who wins it?
I think Minnesota wins it. You take the first two games on the road, you're coming back home where you have a big-time home court advantage. You just have to win one of these games. You go back to Denver up 3-1. It's hard for me based off of what I've seen in the first two games. I also think back a lot to the first-round series last year between these two teams when Denver is on notice saying that was the hardest series that they played all year. I know I keep referencing it on the pod, but when you have the first two games like this series, it obviously shows up why. I don't see a world in which Minnesota doesn't win this series. What are your thoughts?
I agree with you. All the things you said combined with the fact that it's just fucking hard. Like, Denver's basically got to win almost every single game. Like, they got to go undefeated in order to pull this off. I know they don't, but that's what it feels like.
How does Denver's offense, especially with role players now going on the road, how do they get better? And also, how does Minnesota's defense get worse? I
can't tell you that.
Completely flip. I don't see how this series is anything more than maybe a six games win for Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. It's I think we need like 5-10 years to play out before we can really put it into perspective what happened here.
If they sweep them, I think that this is going to go down in the annals of like the biggest, most surprising playoff round two. Maybe just put it into NBA playoff series in total that we've ever seen as far as shock value is concerned.
He's
defending champs.
I mean, that's the thing is I don't know how to explain this to somebody that asked me to explain it to them, because it's like if the Wolves turn around and lose in the conference finals or something, it's like I don't even know. But then it's just a terrible look. But if the Wolves do what we think they're going to do and what I'm saying Anthony Edwards is going to do, then you could just say, yeah, Denver was a great team. But like, I mean, this guy's just ripped off six titles, you know, three three-peats.
And Jokic just won the MVP again. You will have beaten the MVP / reigning NBA champions. And if you sweep them, I don't know what better resume builder there is, because that's not a fluke.
That's the thing where I just feel like when we come on here, if they do that, when we come on here and talk about the Wolves, I just feel like there's not even a point to do it, because no matter what we say, it just won't do that achievement justice.
I agree with you, man. I'm right there with you. It's almost hard to put into words. I'm stumbling over my words just trying to contemplate that happening, because it just it's not supposed to happen.
No, I can't describe it. I really can't comp it. I can't describe it. It's incredible. And now Soy wants to leave. Can we talk about the Thunder and Mavs before you now want to leave the room after you just wanted to come in? It's the fucking Cats are insane.
Did SGA get hosed from the MVP?
No. Joker was the MVP. I mean, that's recency bias, it feels like to me.
Yeah, I mean, the reason I ask is because Jokic doesn't even think he deserved it. He thinks SGA deserved it.
Well, I respect that.
He also doesn't give a fuck about
that. No, I appreciate him saying that. He sounds like a class act as well as a great player, but no, he was our MVP.
Yeah. It's hard to take it away from him. He would have had to have a season that just wasn't up to his normal standards. And if anything, he's better than he was in even two of the years he did win. So, but yeah, let's talk about this series. Dallas gets the win in game two. They desperately needed that. One leg Luka, the legend of one leg Luka right now, could be a thing.
He looks fine.
By the way, did you see his reaction to that reporter's phone that went off the Bluetooth in the presser?
No, what happened?
Oh, God, this is great. For anybody, when you're done listening to us, and Tom, when we're done recording this pod, you got to look it up. I guess somebody's like Bluetooth came disconnected from their phone, and it was basically, I think they were watching porn, because there was just there was just moaning in the background.
Oh,
you heard it like
no.
Pretty audibly. And Luca's face was fucking priceless. 14 of the best seconds that I've seen from a play. Just naturally, like, Luka's reaction was just like, his eyes were just so wide and he looked so confused. It was great.
Listen, if you're going to get caught in 2024 watching porn with all the ways that you can silence
your
phone.
You're a reporter in the goddamn press conference.
You know, in that reporter's defense, though, if you're a reporter, that means that the arena is like a home away from home, and you're there a lot, and sometimes you get a little, you know, you get a little hot and bothered.
You got to make sure that Bluetooth is on, man.
Yeah, really, especially if you're fucking streaming it during a press conference, you sick fuck.
It was fucking great. But yeah,
that was basketball porn last night, though, this game.
This was a great game.
At least from the Mavericks side. I mean, finally, your boy, who you've been... were you in or out on Washington, who had 7 threes last night?
I was giving him his credit, but I also understood that he does, especially when the trade happened, his first stretch with Dallas wasn't very good, but he's been better, and he's been good in the playoffs.
He absolutely has, really good defensively as well. All the role players played extremely well for Dallas, and then Kyrie just is like, he's like what he wanted to be, what he wanted to portray when he was talking too much in ball. He's just like meta. He's like a chess player moving the chess pieces around. He didn't score a lot yesterday, but it just felt like everything that happened aside from the Luka ISOs, Kyrie had a hand in it.
Kyrie is in control of his game now, whether it's as the alpha scorer or when Luke is having a night like he had last night and the role players are playing well, he's able to distribute the ball a lot better and be a playmaker. He's just in complete control of what he wants to do out there for the first time in a long time. And you got to give him a lot of credit for becoming more of that heliocentric type player. And I really respect the way that he has played. Obviously, I would just continue to say, where the fuck was this in Brooklyn? But in the small
in Brooklyn
size,
and Boston.
Yeah, in the small sample size, when him, Harden, and KD played together, this is the version of Kyrie that we saw. So I think he just obviously needed another superstar player with him, and Luke is that guy for damn sure.
Yeah, he's definitely a superstar. As for the Thunder, I mean, listen, if Chet's going to go, what did he do? He had 11-6-6. You're not going to win that game. He's got to have double-digit rebounds. He's got to be in there mucking it up. And then the rest of the team, outside of Jalen Williams, who had 20 points, the rest of the team played terrible. I mean, SGA. I feel like I didn't even say his name because I feel like I don't have to. He had fucking 33-12-8. Maybe we should have given him a little more consideration for MVP, but the rest of the team was terrible.
SGA for me is a guy you don't really have to talk about because he's just going to get his. Unless he has a performance where it's like he drops 60, you can just count him for over 30. You can basically put him for 38-10 or something like that every single game.
Exactly. But for the Thunder, it's like your ancillary pieces just need to step it up. Dort, 8 points. Giddey, 8 points. I mean, Wiggins, 9, who was electric in game 1. They just need to step it up. But I still...
And their defense needs to be better, too. Oh, their defense did not play well yesterday at all.
I honestly think with Luka and Kyrie playing the way they are on the other side, I think this series is going 7. And with a gun to my head, if I'm saying it's going 7, I'm fucking taking Luka in a game 7. So give me the Mavericks.
I need to see Luka play more games like this because we didn't see it in the Clippers series. The Clippers just are going to do what they're going to do, which is peter out. I think Oklahoma City's too good and their defense is too good. So is this a one-off or is this going to start the run of 3 or 4 consecutive Luka masterpieces? I don't know. I'm still going to take the Thunder and I'm going to take them in 6. But if we get another Luka masterpiece and it results in a Dallas win, I'm going to be singing a different tune, but right now I'm sticking with OKC in 6.
You're smart to do that. That's such recency bias out of me, but I'm going to stick to it this time.
You're the king of recency bias.
I am, but then I'm also the king of reneging on it because then I think back to all the times that I've done it. And then I'm like, when are the times that you're right? When you have a feeling and you stick with it. Like the time I fucking, a couple years ago when I was like, Chiefs are winning it, and I stuck to it the whole fucking year, and I looked like a genius, but I just can't get out of my own way when it comes to the NBA playoffs. Every game is just so goddamn exciting.
It is, and when you get certain performances like Luka yesterday, it's like it's easy to talk yourself out of it.
Yeah, it's like he's going to do this forever.
Right, because do you want to be on the side that goes against Luka and Kyrie? That's hard to do.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to be that guy.
It's too hard for me. More power to you. You already mentioned the Joker winning MVP. I thought he was deserving, even with SGA. Do you?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Well, he's a great candidate, but for a guy who's won now 3 and 4 years, Tom, you would need him to fall off of his game, and you would need another season that stood out so much more. And SGA had a great year, Thunder number one seed in the West. We know about Ant. Minnesota was one in the West for a long time. They ended up the 3 seed. But look at what Denver did. You know, we can't be the recency bias people. This is a regular season award. Denver was great, and Jokic was the best player in the sport.
There will be, if things are going the way they currently are, I've got a very good prediction that there will be a new MVP next year.
I think you're right. It's going to be really hard to win 4 in 5 years.
That's going to be really hard to rip it from the hands of the guy that's beating your ass in this series.
There you go.
DPOY, Rudy. He definitely deserves it. He's incredible defensively, and I guess if you're the best defensive player in the league, you should win it. But for me, it's like, I just want to see a couple more guards in there. I want to see Suggs. I want to see somebody like that. I think Isaac could win it if he played full-time minutes, but he just didn't play enough.
You could have given this one to SGA, too, if you really wanted to.
He's a dog.
I think that Gobert deserved it, especially after what we talked about last year with how he fell off. And that was an all-time bad trade, and now they're stuck with him, and they're going to have to trade Towns. And he comes back this year, and he plays – I mean, we talk about how swarming that defense is. He was the best defensive player on the best defensive team. It's hard to say that that's not the right pick there.
Yeah, it's tough to argue. And shout-out to Kat. I got to give Kat a shout-out because we all shit on him, mostly deservedly so, but he's been playing really well, even though Nas bailed him out in game one.
Yep, he's been great. And again, I think it's the maturity, and I think he's been empowered by Edwards to kind of be what he's always should have been, which is the second best or third best player on a championship team. It's Ant's team, and I think I give Kat a lot of credit for seeming to be very cool with that.
Final thing we got here is Wembanyama unanimously wins Rookie of the Year. He should have won, but do you think maybe Chet should have gotten like a smidge more love, or do you think it should have just been unanimous? Here's the trophy. Because I guess if you're looking at post All-Star break, yeah, it's unanimous, but pre All-Star break, I think we could have a conversation.
Yeah, and I would say that conversation probably was leaning towards Chet in January, but what Victor was doing from the All-Star break on was he snatched this award from him.
I mean, yeah, we're talking close. Like first-team All-NBA, second-team All-NBA for Wembanyama. You got to have
look
him rookie
at
the
last
the
15 games that Wembanyama played in. You could make a case he was the best player in the
yeah,
entire
they're,
sport. Yeah,
they're very undeniable.
I can't say that this is bad. And this is just the first of many awards. There are a lot of people who gave Victor the nod for Defensive Player of the Year. I don't think that he was ready to win it yet because the first little bit of his season, you know, he was figuring a lot of shit out. But by the end of the season, you could make a compelling case that he was the best defensive player in the league. He's probably going to win that award every year going forward.
Yeah, I think I could probably go on the record with this one saying he may go home if he has a long career with more hardware than any other player in the history of the league.
I completely agree with you. And for him, all he cares about is raising more banners up with the Spurs.
Yeah, well, let's get some players in there.
That'd be nice. But they're going to have to do that. This summer is going to be fascinating for a lot of reasons. And I think the Spurs are front and center with that. Obviously, a couple of lame duck coaches got fired. Scapegoats, I will use that.
Yeah,
term.
That's even better. That's better.
Lakers fire Darvin Ham. Suns fire Frank Vogel. Sounds like they're bringing in Budenholzer. What are your thoughts on both of those?
I mean, for me, I think Vogel should have stayed with the Lakers the whole time so that they wouldn't have had to fire Darwin Ham, and I like Bud for the Suns. Both firings, I think, if you were to create a blame pie, it's less than 50% their fault.
Ah, the blame pie.
The old, cooking up the old blame pie.
I love it. Yeah, these were just... It's a joke. Both of these rosters are poorly constructed.
But we knew it was coming. Come on.
But we knew it was coming. I was going to finish my thought with that. I'm not naive enough to not believe that. And it sounds like KD and Vogel didn't talk for like 4 months. So this had KD's fingerprints written all over it. You got Ishbia coming out saying 26 other teams would love to have the situation that we do. I would like to pull those 26 other teams and believe and actually get an honest answer.
Yeah, let's ask some GMs.
Yeah, I don't believe that's true. And listen, this is how it's going to go. KD will be traded by the trade deadline next year. Book it.
Ooh, boy. Wait, let me hold on a second. That was 50 minutes and 28 seconds. Let me clip that. I'm not actually clipping it, so you can keep talking, but I just...
this is Brooklyn. This is Brooklyn 2.0. He wanted the coach fired.
It's been a tough scene, dude. It has been a tough scene.
He wanted the coach fired in Brooklyn. They didn't do it originally, but 10 games in, they fired Nash. He got Jacques Vaughn, which is what he wanted, and then they traded him. And Ishbia and the Suns are going to have a very similar situation next year when the West is only going to get better because Memphis is going to be back in the equation. You've got a lot of good teams. You've got young teams that are going to be undeniably better. When Phoenix has all their primetime games against Minnesota and Oklahoma City and New Orleans and Memphis, we're going to see them get dramatically outplayed. And then by the trade deadline, Ishbia is going to be forced to trade Durant because he doesn't want to trade Booker. And that's how it's going to go. And they're stuck with Beal because no one's going to take him.
Well, you heard it here first, everybody. And I mean, I can't really think of a top 15 player in any sport that's tarnished their legacy late in their career like he has on the court. I mean, O.J. Simpson, we don't have to. Yeah. I'm not going to put those two in the same category, KD. I wouldn't do that.
Again, we're not saying R.I.P.
No. R.I.H. Rest in hell, you motherfucker.
Rest in hell.
But. Yeah, I'm not going to, I would never, KD,
by the way,
I would never comp
say,
you, by the way, to OJ. I'm just saying in this
that
situation.
That was a very Norm MacDonald-esque comment by you. That was great.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I mean, OJ Simpson.
I mean, he's the king of the OJ joke, so I'm glad I could be mentioned.
I still think the ESPYs one is my favorite.
Yeah.
Congratulations, Charles Woodson. No one can take this away from you. Unless you kill your wife and waiter, in which case.
Oh man, gotta love that guy.
R.I.P.
That is an R.I.P. I'm willing to hand out.
Yes, absolutely. But yeah, KD, man. To finish your point, it's looking at it retrospectively while still being in the moment. It's hard to envision somebody having a worse situation for being this good of a player. You continue to put yourself in the worst situations possible.
Yeah. No, and it's really all self-inflicted. You know, you can feel bad for other guys where it's like Larry Fitzgerald. Oh, I mean, he was the best wide receiver in football for his entire career, but he just never had a team around him, never had anybody to throw him the ball until Palmer and Warner showed up. But KD, it's like, dude, these were all your decisions. You could have gone anywhere you wanted if they had the money, and they probably would have made it work for you. This is on you, brother.
And if you had let the Nets open the bidding, shit, he could have been in Minnesota with playing with Ant. He could have been in New Orleans playing with Zion. He could have been a lot of other places, but instead it's, no, I want to go to Phoenix. I want to go to Phoenix. And then to double down and force the Bradley Beal trade, which we knew then and know now.
I think KD to the Suns is not bad. It's the giving up all the assets for Bradley Beal because – you know, if you think about any of these other teams, the Suns had plenty of assets until they went out and got Beal.
They had more, but their assets were gone in the Durant trade.
Yeah, some of them, but I think the Beal mistake is really what killed
him. The Beal mistake sucks because he has a full no trade and is going to be making upwards of $55 million a year. That's the worst.
But you knew that. It's not like you were blindsided by that. You knew that when you fucking traded for the guy.
Right. And also, too, is you should have known that with the second apron and the new CBA that you're not going to be able to fill out the margins on the roster with really great role players for nothing. That's not going to be possible anymore. The Lakers have learned that the hard way. Clippers are going to learn that the hard way if they decide to run it back. You can't win. You know how you win? you have a superstar young player like Ant with a lot of other good role players who are young and hungry, or you're the Knicks who got the best bargain in the history of bargains with Brunson.
So the NBA is turning into the NFL, a hard cap league, huh?
It certainly seems that way, bro.
Any good plans for the weekend?
It's supposed to rain a lot, so I'm not going to be outside too much. We'll see what ends up going on. What about you? What do you got going?
I'm just getting fucking sick and tired of this New York weather for the last what feels like year or two, where it's like it's gorgeous on a Tuesday as I'm sitting at a computer on a fucking bucket somewhere programming something, and then Saturday it's pouring rain. It's like,
oh, that sucks.
Yeah, it's this weather is just such bullshit. We're gonna have a dreary weekend. Happy Mother's Day, Mom, and Sean's mom.
Yes, happy Mother's Day to my mother as well, and all mothers out there.
All mothers, OJ's mom.
All right, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.
All right, everybody. Bye.